You're with us for the morning show as we continue our campaign candidate conversations leading up to the November general election. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Democratic candidate Roger Pawlak seeks to challenge first-term U.S. Representative Brian Stile, a Republican in the 1st Congressional District. And we will hear from both of them this hour, half and half, starting with Pawlak. Do you live in Janesville, Kenosha, Racine, or another part of the 1st Congressional District? What issues matter to you? We're at 800-642-1234. Roger Pawlak is a Democrat from Racine. Roger, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you so much for having me this morning, Kate. I appreciate it.
So when we last talked with you at the end of the July, ahead of the August primary, you named your three priorities in Congress, first of which is health care and bringing down prescription drug costs. Campaign finance and climate change were the other two. Are these still your top priorities for what you want to accomplish?
You know, given the way that the pandemic has hit our country, we need to focus on getting our country back on track economically, first and foremost. And in the case of the 1st District, you know, we need a lot of support down here, and Congress needs to act quickly and continue the benefits that we had going earlier this year. And so that would be a huge priority of mine, is to get our country back on track, in addition to working on bringing down the cost of prescription drug prices and health care for everyone in this country, as well as jobs and the climate.
With the getting on track with COVID-19, the House passed a revised stimulus bill yesterday includes the $600 a week in federal unemployment benefits. What do you make of this stimulus package?
I support it. I think we need to have that stimulus package in place. I think the fact that we let the stimulus lapse and the increased unemployment benefits lapse was an abdication of responsibility by Congress. And, you know, there's an argument that people are hoarding the money or that individuals are unduly profiting off of this. People are missing a huge point that this money for individuals, this $600 per month, per week extra, is going straight back into the economy. People are using that to buy gas, groceries, and to pay rent. And, you know, I grew up in a family that struggled to make ends meet when I was a child. My mom worked three jobs to keep a roof over our heads. And I'm just imagining what it would be like if this was my family as a kid. My mom worked in the retail sector, and she would be undoubtedly hard hit by this, and our family would be hard hit by this. And I think we need to make sure that lower-income families, middle-class families, have the ability to withstand this crisis, and that small businesses are able to get back on track and keep their employees employed. And this stimulus does exactly that, and I fully support it.
Let's bring in Tom now, joining us from Burlington with a question. Hi, Tom, go ahead.
I'm in your district here in Burlington, and I have such a hard time in these stores. People will not wear masks, and they abuse people here with if you do wear a mask. And I just wonder, does it take a federal law to make people wear a mask and stop the abuse of people?
Governor Evers issued a new statewide mask mandate, and should the mask mandate be continued, Roger?
I believe it should, and that mandate in Wisconsin goes through November, and I believe we need to keep that going. And I appreciate that question, Tom. And you know, let me say also at the top here that I wish the president a speedy recovery, and I think what his coming down with the virus shows is that we need to take this absolutely seriously, and that individuals need to wear masks and take this seriously, social distance. And if we don't do that, this virus is going to continue to ravage our country. Now we're at 208,000 people dead in this country, and that did not have to happen. We could have had social distance mask mandates in place earlier in Wisconsin. Here, the governor tried to do through his emergency orders that were struck down because of the Republican legislature. And so, you know, this pandemic has been poorly mishandled, and the president bears a great deal of responsibility for that, knowing early on that this was a serious issue, downplaying it to the American people. And I think we obviously have a clear choice this November in Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. And everyone should be aware that there is one person who is taking this seriously and one person who's not. And the same goes for me and my opponent, Brian Stile. He is all over social media, going to events without masks on, putting not only himself at risk, but everyone that's around him at risk. And I am taking this virus completely seriously. And the people of Wisconsin need to do that as well so that we can get this under control.
We're talking with Roger Pollack, who is a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. It's part of our candidate conversations leading up to the November election. What would you like to ask the candidate? Do you live in the 1st Congressional District? What do you want to see happen on Capitol Hill amid COVID? Join in at 800-642-1234. Roger, there is controversy surrounding your residence, your two homes in Washington, D.C., and your homestead tax exemption in Washington. What can you tell us about that?
You know, I grew up in Racine. I met my wife here at high school. My whole family has lived in Racine the entire time that I was away, the vast majority of which was serving our country. I spent 10 years in the Bush and Obama administrations working to stop funding to terrorist organizations in Asia. I deployed to Afghanistan for almost 2 years, working to stop funding to the Taliban and worked on major corruption initiatives. I also worked to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. And by the way, Iran is closer to a nuclear weapon than it was at the time that Donald Trump took over as president. And so the vast majority of the time that I have been away from this district was to work on keeping our country safe. And I've come back here to win this seat back for individuals who are working to make ends meet, for lower-income families, for middle-class individuals, for people who care about democratic principles. And that's why I'm running this race to beat Brian Stiles. And I know how to get things done in Washington, D.C., sure. But, you know, I am from Racine. I grew up here. I live here. My children go to daycare here. And you know, I'm not hiding from the fact that I lived in Washington, D.C. and served our country. And, you know, I've cleared up the issues with the Homestead Deduction Act, and that's been retroactive from October of 2019. And, you know, again, I am running this race to beat Brian Stiles and have representation in this district that for the first time in over 20 years is not on the take from corporations. Brian Stiles has taken over $500,000 in money from corporate PACs, 200,000 of which comes from banks and insurance companies that he has direct oversight on the House Financial Services Committee. And so if we want to talk about, you know, problems with someone running for Congress, let's talk about the institutionalized corruption that Brian Stiles perpetuates.
Okay. Well, I want to jump in here and get back to some issues. Milwaukee, West Allis, and Waukesha have the highest unemployment rate of any municipal area in our state. Currently, it's 7.4%. How do you plan to address the issue of unemployment?
One huge way to do that is to have a package in place that focuses on infrastructure development in Southeast Asia, or Southeast and Wisconsin, rather. Donald Trump has pushed for infrastructure investment weeks throughout his presidency. Brian Stiles campaigned on getting infrastructure development into southeastern Wisconsin. And we need to work hard on making that a reality, to bring infrastructure investment to our region and have employment and based off of that, build new infrastructure, have green infrastructure in place, and also use that to work on the climate crisis that we're facing and bring our economy into the 21st century here in southeastern Wisconsin. And I would be a huge proponent of getting real infrastructure investment into this area that increases union-paying jobs in southeastern Wisconsin.
We're having candidate conversations leading up to the general election. Today is with Democratic candidate Roger Pollack, who is running for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. The district covers Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties, parts of three neighboring counties, including the city of Janesville. Are you an undecided voter in this district? What do you need to know before casting a ballot? What should Congress focus on? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with candidate Roger Pollack here on the Ideas Network. It is candidate conversations leading up to the November general election here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Roger Pollack, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. He's challenging Republican U.S. Representative Brian Stiles, who we will hear from next. Who has your vote? What issues should Congress focus on amid the pandemic? What issues do you consider in congressional elections? How much do you care about a candidate's positions, their track record, or their party affiliation? Join in 800-642-1234. Candidate Roger Pollack stays with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Jeff, who is joining us from Pleasant Prairie this morning. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
My comment is that I don't officially belong to the Democratic Party, but I normally vote Democrat, and you got my vote, Roger. But
thank you, Jeff.
I feel in the last few years that my vote is wasted because our district has been so heavily gerrymandered. And what are your thoughts about the districting and possible redistricting?
Jeff, thank you. Roger, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. And yeah, the district has been drawn in a way to make it as hard as possible. But listen, in 2008, President Obama won here. And in 2018, Tammy Baldwin came within 0.6% of winning this district. And my campaign ran a poll showing that Biden and Trump were tied in this district. And so we've got a fantastic shot at getting this done this year, Jeff. And I would encourage everyone to get out and vote. And it's going to be about voter turnout this year. We need to get as many people out to vote as possible. And if this district goes for Joe Biden, he's going to win the state of Wisconsin. Everyone out there needs to know that. And I am going to help Joe Biden get elected, and also Joe Biden's turnout will help me. So we need to work together as a Democratic Party, independents, and Republicans who are fed up with this administration and with the Republican positions over the last few years. And so I encourage everyone to get out there and vote. And keep the faith. We can actually get this done this year. I'm against someone, again, who is bought and paid for by corporations. And we have the opportunity to bring in change in this district finally.
I want to talk about the protests back in August. Protests took place after a white Kenosha officer shot Jacob Blake, a black man. We saw in March, Breonna Taylor was shot and killed by police officers in Louisville. The officer was not charged. What role should Congress have in police brutality and how to stop it?
Yeah, obviously what we saw last month in Kenosha was extremely distressing, both the shooting of Jacob Blake and the aftermath. And the role for Congress there is to pass, first of all, and this is right in front of us, pass criminal justice reform bills that help bring the community and police together, not drive them further apart. And the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act is a great example of that. It has provisions in there that would ban the use of chokehold, reexamine the use of force, and provide funding to law enforcement agencies and additional DOJ oversight. I think that's hugely important. Like the fact that Kenosha doesn't have in their budget to have body cameras until 2022 is extremely problematic, and they need money to write that and make sure that they have body cameras in place, not only for the citizens for accountability, but for the police to be able to defend themselves in instances where they feel like what actions they took were responsible. And so I am for funding the police, not defunding, and for working with them as a community. And I think there, again, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act is the first great step at doing that. There are also issues here with this huge wealth gap that we see in different communities. And there are also easy ways that the federal government can help that. And
well, in Kenosha in particular, a third of black residents live below the poverty line. A black worker in Kenosha earns about half that of which a white worker earns. How do you plan to address those disparities?
Yeah, so it's in working, it's in home ownership, it's in small business ownership. And I think we need to unlock the credit in this country and get that to low-income communities, black communities, low-income white communities, and unleash the credit that is in this country. And we do that through looking at different sources of credit. I've talked to a lot of leaders in the black community who think that, and I agree with this, that if we are able to increase home ownership in the black community, increase small business ownership in the black community, that would go a huge way in closing this gap that we see. You know, the home ownership is the way that the middle class stores, accumulates, and passes on wealth. And that has been out of reach because of credit issues. So if we look at an individual's ability, for example, to pay rent, to pay utilities on time, that should be included in someone's credit score. And that should help unlock the ability to get a home loan. And, you know, I grew up in a family where owning a home was out of the question. My family rented for 18 years, first 18 years of my life. And, you know, that's income, that's money that just gets thrown down the drain every month. And we need to have the policies in place, and the federal government can help with this, to have banks, incentivize banks to lend to lower income populations. And I would absolutely be pushing for that.
The head of the American Bar Association is asking Congress to appropriate $100 billion for rental assistance. What is your view of evictions now and rental assistance aid?
Yeah, people need that. People need to have security that they will not be evicted, especially in a time like this where, you know, the package from Congress has been unrealized for months now. Individuals are hurting. And yes, I completely support that effort. And I am for making sure that people have security and housing before this pandemic hit. That was already an issue and certainly has been exacerbated. And we need to do everything we can to make sure that people stay in their homes. And there's certainly a humanitarian argument for that. It's very clear. But also economically, that just is going to cost more money down the line for this country if people start going out on the street. And, you know, there's a whole second order effect from that. And so we need to make sure that families stay in their homes through this period of time. And that afterwards, like I said, that we unlock the credit that this country has, and we push that down to individuals to buy homes, to start small businesses, and to start really recovering as a country together.
Go ahead.
I believe that the story of Kenosha in 2020 is not yet written. We have an opportunity here in southeastern Wisconsin to be an example for the rest of the country. And I believe we've already achieved that. Kenosha quickly ended the violence organically and has moved on. And now there's a dialogue going on about how to move forward. And I think, again, this is a fantastic opportunity for Wisconsin to be an example for the rest of the country.
We're talking with Roger Pollack, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. It's part of our candidate conversations leading up to the November election. What questions do you have for Roger Pollack? What do you want to know about his positions, his qualifications, his platform? Join in at 800-642-1234. Roger, there is a new task force in the State Assembly that is working to address issues like racial disparities and working on police reform. What does this task force need to accomplish? Because you mentioned Kenosha making great strides. What do you consider the benchmark for success?
Well, first of all, I think that task force needs to, as I said, you know, check politics at the door and just look at the issues that are in front of us and address those and listen. You know, I think the first thing that we need to do in this task force and as a community is listen to the Black community and hear from them what concerns they have, and then start working to address them. But coming together with real solutions, first and foremost, is important. And I think working with the legislature to pass laws that would, I think the law that has the U.S. or the Wisconsin Attorney General, you know, have oversight over police investigations is a great one. And I think we need to have policies in place that give local individuals and local governments greater confidence in the relationship between the police and the community.
Your opponent, Congressman Brian Steil, wants U.S. Attorney General William Barr to investigate the protests in Kenosha and the Justice Department to investigate protests across the nation. Do you think this type of intervention is appropriate?
Well, if you read Brian Steil's whole press release on that, what he says is that he acknowledges that there already is ongoing DOJ investigation. And that his letter to Attorney General Barr is a complete sham. There already are federal investigations going on in what happened in Kenosha. Brian Steil continues to try to take credit for the peaceful healing that we've seen in Kenosha after violent looting and rioting that took place. I agree that when people have committed crimes and federal crimes, the Department of Justice is the right place for that. But I disagree with Brian Steil's approach and how he continues to try to take credit for things that have been already done before he's acted. And so, you know, Brian Steil is just an example of a politician who is trying to gain personally from a tragic event in our region.
Very quickly, before we have to let you go, when you can't knock on doors, you can't really, certainly shake hands with people or talk face-to-face. How are you campaigning now?
doing a lot of things virtually. We're having online meet and greets, and we are doing very limited social distance discussions with individuals. But yeah, it's a hard environment to work in. I've got a great volunteer corps that is making phone calls and getting out and placing door hangers. Again, very, very safe and securely. But I'm having a great dialogue with voters in the district. And we've got, a fantastic opportunity here to bring in representation that for once is not going to be bought and paid for by corporations.
Roger, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Roger Pollack is a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. The district covers Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties, parts of three neighboring counties, including Janesville. Coming up, we continue this with U.S. Representative Brian Steil, a Republican in the 1st Congressional District, the challenger to Roger Pollack. You have a line to Steil, 800-642-1234. We'll be back with him after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As part of our election coverage, the Ideas Network is doing interviews with candidates on the ballot for seats in Congress. And we continue these today with a focus on the 1st Congressional District. We have Republican incumbent U.S. Representative Brian Steil from Janesville on the line. Steil is seeking a second term in the House. He was elected in 2018, succeeding former House Speaker Paul Ryan, who retired after 20 years in Congress. And Steil serves on the House Financial Services Committee. What do you want to ask Congressman Steil? Do you live in Janesville, Kenosha, Racine, or another part of the district? What issues matter to you? We're at 800-642-1234. Representative Brian Steil, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Kate, thanks for having me on.
So if you're elected into Congress, what are three things that you want to accomplish? What is topping your agenda?
We need to ultimately defeat this virus and keep America healthy. We need to get Wisconsin back to work, and we got to keep our communities safe. And so as I look out at the 2 years ahead, those are my top priorities. We need to make sure we're doing everything we can to medically defeat this virus, making sure that we develop a vaccine, that we get the vaccine available and out to individuals, and we ultimately allow Americans and us in Wisconsin to get our lives back. We need to get Wisconsin back to work. We need to make sure we're continuing pro-growth policies that put forward family-sustaining jobs in Southeast Wisconsin and across our state. I'll plan to continue to do that. And finally, we need to make sure that we keep our communities safe. We need to make sure that our law enforcement has the resources they need to be able to do that. That played out firsthand in Kenosha. And I think we see the importance of making sure that we're supporting and working with our local law enforcement to keep our community safe.
We will get to Kenosha soon. I want to look first at COVID. And last week, Governor Evers issued a new statewide mask mandate, and the order is set to last until November 21st. If it survives legal challenges, should the mask mandate be continued?
We should not have a federal mask mandate. A one-size-fits-all approach is not correct. I think using and allowing local decision-makers is the right approach. I follow the mask when I'm traveling, say on Southwest Airlines, when I'm traveling from my home in Janesville, Wisconsin, out to Washington, D.C., or when I go pick up food at Festival Foods at the grocery store in Janesville. I think what we need to do is follow the advice of our physicians and ultimately work to defeat this virus.
So Wisconsin has experienced one of the highest percentage increases of COVID cases. It's spreading very rapidly here. What needs to be done to reduce COVID that we're seeing here in Wisconsin?
This is where it's going to be kind of an all-of-the-above approach. One, we need to continue at the federal level, investing in both our testing as well as vaccine development. Ultimately, we're going to look to defeat this virus and looking towards our medical experts to assist us in doing that. The sooner we reach a vaccine and are able to distribute it, and we're going full steam ahead, and I continue to support the funding in place to do that, that is critical. In the meantime, we need to take appropriate precautionary steps to slow the spread of coronavirus. And we can do a number of things. There's good CDC guidance out there for individuals as to what they can do to slow the spread and protect America's health.
What is your view on President Trump's response to the pandemic so far and the president testing positive for COVID?
Well, the thoughts and prayers go out to both the president and the first lady and to everyone that has been impacted by coronavirus. So I think we want everyone to wish them a speedy recovery and a speedy recovery for everyone that has been impacted or in some cases has lost a loved one to this very serious disease. What we need to do is to continue to attack the virus to make sure that we're ultimately able to defeat it. It's going to be a combination of practices that individuals can do, following good health guidance, as well as driving towards a vaccine. From the early days, I joined bipartisan groups sitting with leadership of the House and including members of the White House, talking about what we need to do to defeat the virus. Early on, I held a telephone town hall with the Wisconsin Secretary of Health and Human Services to inform people of the precautions that they can take to be healthy. I've been working to get information out to people across Southeast Wisconsin, official information from government leaders, from health experts, so that people could take precautions. This is a challenging virus, and it's something that we're going to have to continue to work on to protect the health of the American people.
We're talking with U.S. Congressman Brian Stile, Republican, representing Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, running for re-election. It's part of our candidate conversations leading up to the November election. Let's bring in a call now. Ben is joining us from Madison. Hi, Ben.
Good morning. Morning, Mr. Stiles. I've just listened to you use words like attack and defeat and personal responsibility and informing people about what they can do. Comparing our country's response to others, it's clear that this concept of just kind of lightly telling people here's what you ought to do isn't working. Why aren't you supporting stronger measures like mask mandates, which have clearly worked in cultures and countries like South Korea and New Zealand?
Representative?
Well, I think what we have seen is decisive action taken here in the United States. We could go back to the early days of the pandemic where the president put in place a travel ban from China that was highly criticized by people who disagreed with it. I think it was a good move that ultimately saved lives here in the United States. Every culture is going to be a little bit different. I think as we look out to the state of Wisconsin, we see people being really thoughtful, smart. Wisconsin is a really smart kind of state. As I see going out in my daily business, I go, like I said, to the grocery store, to other places in my hometown of Janesville. I see a lot of people following the CDC guidance. The real key here is behavior, and we have the opportunity to make choices that can both protect our own health, but as well as the health of others. And so in encouraging people to make good decisions, I think we have the opportunity to turn the corner here on coronavirus and ultimately defeat the virus. But I think there has been a lot of really decisive action taken in the United States, including significant investment in the medical side. As you think to the early days of the shortage of the personal protective equipment, the United States has ramped up incredibly well on their production of personal protective equipment, still room to grow. The United States has done a good job in ramping up the number of testing and the availability of testing. We have one of the largest testing regimes in the world. Now, we still have room for improvement, but the United States has done a very good job of building up that testing infrastructure. So the United States and the United States government working hand in glove with state and local governments has done many things successfully. That said, this is a very, very difficult virus to defeat, and we're going to have to work together to be able to ultimately defeat this virus.
On the economic side of it, your chamber passed a revised stimulus bill with a stimulus check yesterday, the updated HEROES Act. It includes that $600 a week in federal unemployment benefits. Do you support weekly federal aid benefits for unemployed Americans, unemployed Wisconsinites?
So the bill that went through the House last night was a very disappointing partisan bill that doesn't have a chance of becoming law. This is where politics in Washington, D.C. gets in the way of good policy. There were even Democrats last night who voted against the bill, expressing their disgust that we were not able to come to an agreement. I think what we need to stay focused on is providing relief to those people who've been negatively impacted
but
by coronavirus.
Can you put a dollar amount on it? Do you support weekly federal unemployment benefits?
So every state, so break that down. Great question. So every state runs their own unemployment system. The United States added $600 on top of each state's unemployment benefits with the original CARES Act. That's a bill that ultimately I drove from my home in Washington, in Wisconsin, to Washington, D.C. to support. In that bill, they provide an additional $600. So in the state of Wisconsin, unemployment benefits were $370 for individuals making a certain income threshold. That's $9.25 an hour if you work 40 hours a week. The federal government added on top of that $600 a week. That's an additional $15 an hour, meaning an individual on unemployment could make up to $24.25 an hour. In many cases, that was more than an individual was making prior to the pandemic. And so the challenge is encouraging people to go and work safely. And it's a fairness issue for those individuals that are working. I met a woman from Oak Creek who had a job. She was making $18 an hour. Her and her male colleague were both furloughed. They were on unemployment. Their wage went up from $18 an hour to effectively a $24.25 wage. She got called back. She returned to work, went back to making $18 an hour. Her male colleague, who was not called back yet, was still at home, not working, making $24.25 an hour. Where individuals are making more money on unemployment than they were in their job, we have a really challenging issue and unfairness to, in this case, that woman in Oak Creek. What we want to do is make sure people have the resources to pay the bills, cover the mortgage, but
then what would you pass? What would you support?
Well, I think where we are in the negotiation is providing additional funds to states to make sure that they can provide.
So not to individual Americans.
So I think there's two separate things. So the CARES Act, the $600 a week in addition to your unemployment benefit, was provided to states, and states were then in the process of distributing those to individuals through the state unemployment benefit program. That's the program in Wisconsin that's had a lot of challenges in getting the unemployment benefit.
That expired weeks and weeks ago. But what about going forward?
So I think that's the exact discussion. We should be focused in on making sure that people are able to cover their bills, cover their mortgage. So if there's a plus up, that plus up should be capped at a point where the individual is making that income previously. So again, for example, if someone was making $18 an hour before they were impacted by the coronavirus, providing them more money in the event that they're not working is unfair to the individuals that are there and working. And so in the original plan of how unemployment insurance worked, that is the operation. Wisconsin pays roughly 50%. Wisconsin could change the law tomorrow, could change, set a different rate. The federal government should assist in that program, but should not create an incentive where people are making more money by staying home than they would if they're working. It's just unfair to those individuals who are going to work every day.
U.S. Representative Brian Stile running for re-election in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, facing Democratic challenger Roger Pollack, whom we talked with earlier in the hour. Your thoughts, your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's candidate conversations leading up to the November general election here on The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Cheer-Kent. We have incumbent Republican U.S. Representative Brian Stile as we focus on the 1st congressional district race this hour. He's being challenged by Democrat Roger Pollack, whom we heard from earlier. And Congressman Brian Stile stays with us for 10 more minutes. Let's go back to the phones now. Jacob is joining us from Burlington. Hi, Jacob.
Hi. Yes, I'm a resident of your district from your town of Burlington. We've had a really ugly exposure of racism in our community over the school board attempting to develop a curriculum that is inclusive of racial justice and diversity. There were some ugly meetings at a school board meeting recently. A teacher has been threatened by people who are espousing a very racist policy. I'm a member of the Burlington Coalition to Dismantle Racism. I want to know what you're going to do about systemic racism, what you can do in terms of developing laws that would promote a diverse education to help us deal with racism on a community level in your district where there is a lot of racism.
Representative Stile?
Great question, and an important topic to bring up. There is no place for racism in the United States of America, and we all have to work together to stomp out any time we observe racism, bigotry. This is the land of freedom and opportunity, and we need to continually commit ourselves to that objective. As the United States Constitution lays out, we are working to create a more perfect union. That's a journey. It's not a destination. And all of us need to do our part to work to create a more perfect union. Great question. Let's talk about some policies. One, I support school choice. I think it's important that individuals, moms and dads, are able to choose the best school for their child, regardless of the color of their skin, regardless of the zip code that they were born into. I think that's a key principle, that individuals should be given that opportunity. I think that's incredibly important, in particular for some of our underrepresented minority groups. I think we can leverage our pro-economic agenda, the tax reform that was done, that put in place opportunity zones. That creates incentives for businesses to go create jobs in some of our most challenged neighborhoods in Wisconsin and across the country. There's opportunity zones in Janesville, downtown Racine, in Kenosha, where the former Chrysler plant was located, sitting in one of the more challenged neighborhoods in Kenosha, is now an opportunity zone that somebody hopefully will take advantage of to bring jobs to some of our more challenged neighborhoods. There's policies that we can put in place that move us forward as a country, but anytime we observe or see racism or negative behavior by our colleagues or individuals in the United States of America, it needs to be stomped out. And we need to recommit ourselves to creating a more perfect union.
Well, in the wake of the Kenosha officer shooting Jacob Blake, a black male, and then in March, Breonna Taylor being shot and killed by a white officer not charged, what role should Congress have in addressing police brutality in Wisconsin and in America?
I've worked with Senator Scott from South Carolina on this exact issue. I support a bill called the Justice Act. It has a large number of co-sponsors. I think there's an opportunity yet this year to get this bill across the line. It would do, I think, two really important things amongst an array of issues. One, it would provide funding for body cameras. I think that if that funding had been in place, that would have been very helpful for everyone to be able to know more of the facts as things played out in a very challenging incident in Kenosha. Two, I think that inside this bill that I'm supportive of, there's funding for our police departments to receive additional training for de-escalation in particular. This type of training, this type of investment in our local law enforcement, I think is a great opportunity. And when I've spoken to folks across Southeast Wisconsin, faith leaders, community leaders, law enforcement members, law enforcement leadership, I see broad support for this bill. And I think it's one of the things that we can do at the federal level to work towards creating that more perfect union.
Talking with Congressman Brian Stile, a Republican representing the 1st Congressional District, who is running for re-election. It's part of our candidate conversations. Let's bring in Allison now from Racine. Hi, Allison. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a comment and a question. The comment is, I think it's really sad that the Republicans, including Representative Stile, are still putting party before country and politics before people and not agreeing to a federal mandate for masks to defeat and slow the spread of COVID. We know it works. There's proof all over the world that it works, and they still refuse to do that. My question is, Representative Stile, what do you say to the white supremacist groups giving support to Republicans? Will you publicly reject their activity, their domestic terrorist tendencies, and any support that they give to Republicans?
Representative?
I think I've been very clear on this issue. There is no room. In our society for white supremacy. There's no room in our society for racism. There's no room in our society for bigotry. Anytime we observe those types of behaviors from individuals in the United States of America, they need to be stomped out. I've been very clear on this. I also think, as I said in the previous question, there's policies that we couldn't put in place that address some of these most challenging issues we have. I sit and have coalitions of groups across Southeast Wisconsin and Racine and Kenosha and Janesville and everywhere in between, where I speak and meet and listen to individuals about what we can all do to make our country better. And again, I think that there are policies in place, such as school choice, such as opportunity zones, that address some of the challenges that we have in our society, in particular as it relates to underrepresented minority groups. But I've been very clear, and I want to be very clear again, that anytime we see white supremacy, that we see racism in our society, we need to call it out and we need to put a stop to it.
You're urging U.S. Attorney General William Barr to investigate the protests in Kenosha and demonstrations around the country. What do you hope this will accomplish?
I wrote a letter, as you noted, to U.S. Attorney William Barr to investigate and get answers as to groups and individuals that came from outside the community, outside our state, into Kenosha in particular, and with the intent of causing criminal destruction and criminal damage. And so I would like to see a full and thorough investigation. I believe we need answers as to was there and who was coordinating some of this criminal activity and who was funding some of this criminal activity. Where was the funding from where individuals were getting Molotov cocktails, where they were getting gas masks, where they were clearly coming to our community in Kenosha to cause criminal destruction and damage? That's separate from individuals' First Amendment rights. I'll protect individuals' First Amendment rights to the end. But there's a fine and bright line between your First Amendment right and the criminal activity we saw play out in the evening hours in Kenosha. And I think we will all benefit by having a full understanding of the facts, a full understanding of if there's leadership, if there's funding, so that we can prevent this from ever happening again in any community in the United States of America.
Jeffrey in Prescott called in, couldn't stay with us, and wants to know if you support raising the federal minimum wage.
I'm focused on raising everyone's wage. I think what we should be doing is putting in place policies that allow individuals to get back to work, to grow wages in our communities. You can do that not by putting a federal mandate in place. You can do that by encouraging investment, encouraging job creation. Before we were punched in the face by coronavirus, what we were seeing play out in Wisconsin was one of the stronger economies that we had seen in generations across the board, including African Americans, Hispanics, women, veterans. If we put in place pro-growth policies, and this is kind of where you get in this esoteric discussion of how do you put in place a competitive tax code, and that sounds far and abstract, but that reform that was put in place was leading.
So you're saying these other factors, instead of raising a federal minimum wage, you would look to other ways to incentivize the wages of Americans.
I think there are great policies that we could put in place that raise the wages of Americans. And our focus should not be on getting people to a minimum wage. It should be getting people above any minimum wage, getting people above $15 an hour. And we see more of those opportunities by investing in workforce development in Wisconsin and by putting in place pro-growth policies rather than a one-size-fits-all federal mandate that sets the floor. I'd rather focus on moving people up and into higher wages.
Representative Stile, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
U.S. Congressman Brian Stile, Republican, representing Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, running for re-election. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.